Your hair looks much better now, Mark.
Thank you. At long last, I got it cut. Ugh, what a mess that was. looks like we have quorum, Ken. So whenever you want to start the meeting, the recording is already started.
Okay. So let's see. I've done this for a while.
Introductions first.
I'm calling a meeting to order with quorum. And introductions, let's start with council chair members. Okay, sorry.
No worries.
Irma?
Hi, Irma Parada, council member.
Matt?
Matt Geltmaker, council member.
Okay, Mark. I thought you were.
I was actually just waiting for you, Dave.
Sorry, I can't hear you. There's something happening on my speakers. Give me a second.
Sorry, that's okay. We're interrupting the introductions anyway.
So you said we had quorum. Who are our quorum?
So we have Na as well.
Na. I didn't see you. Yeah, your pop up.
Nali, Warren County Council member.
And Ken Pierce, co-chair for the community council affairs committee. So that's the four of us that are quorum.
Yes.
Okay. So other than that, let me see what else we got.
Oh, we should do introductions for the rest of us as well.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'll start because I'm going to be actually leaving this meeting now that Dave's here because I'm actually on vacation now.
Isn't it your birthday tomorrow?
It is my birthday tomorrow.
And how old will you be?
I'll be 53 and proud.
Happy birthday, Mark.
Thank you. And thanks, Dave, for handling resource allocation. I'll see y'all later. Bye-bye.
Yep.
I'll make you host before I leave.
So I think we're going on with the other members present. I think that's John and Sharon, Kira and Dave. Introductions. And Jason.
Hi, I'm Sharon Pipkin. I'm a representative from San Francisco Department of Public Health.
Others?
Hi, Johnny Zahir from HIV Health Services.
Jason?
Yeah, my name is Jason Mello. I work with Sharon at DPH, so I'm joining as an observer today.
And Kira?
Kira, council staff.
Okay, I think that's all of us.
David Jordan, council staff. I know, Ken, you love the
you were just
love it if I wasn't here sometimes.
You were just introduced by Mark, so we, you know, but thank you. Okay, so I think we first want to approve the agenda. Can we see that? Okay, so any changes to the agenda? Any comments? Doesn't look like it. All right, we'll go from there on to an approval unless there are any objections. I'll approve unanimously. Any objections? None? Okay. Next, Kira, is what on the agenda? I don't have mine in front of me.
I have the minutes.
Minutes, okay. And I think we had Irma joining us. Is that right? Irma, did
yes.
I see? Okay, so we'll add you on there. Thank you. Next is approving our minutes. Have people reviewed them or do people find any changes? Hearing none. I move that we approve these unanimously without any objections. All right, we've approved the minutes. Next on our agenda is, correct?
We have announcements.
announcement. Sorry, I'm away from home and pulling up double is not working for me. So any announcements?
I have an announcement, which is personal, that I'm going to have to turn my camera off because I'm going to have to be sitting outside. They're doing some work at home and I don't want to disturb the meeting. So I'm going to have the camera off. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Let's see. Next, we've got the agenda. So I guess the next on our agenda, Kira,
is public comment.
And since there's no public here, there's no public comment. Thank you. Next.
We have our funding scenarios, which David will be talking about.
All right. And let's also welcome TJ. TJ, you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, everybody. I am actually in the library in between classes, so I can't really talk. But
okay,
glad to finally join the meeting.
Thank you. So hopefully you can vote with your hand or something if we need to. Thank you. All right. We'll go ahead then with the presentation. Dave?
If Kira could share the prioritization sheet, this should be a familiar document to, I believe, all of you. I don't remember if you joined us before or after, since our last summit, since our last summit.
Yeah, this will be my first time, but I do the process with Marin County, so it might be similar.
Yeah. So the one thing, what we're seeing here is the prioritization sheet for all of the HRSA-defined service categories. You'll note here under both core and support services that marked in gray are categories that are not currently funded, but still sort of they do exist, they just are not funded via Ryan White. It was asked that we include those those categories that had previously been funded so that they could be part of your prioritization. So we can get a sense of whether they're being funded or not, how important are they? So you'll see pharmaceuticals, early intervention services, medical nutrition therapy on core, and then housing residential programs, housing residential subsidies, residential substance abuse, medical detox, rehabilitation, referral, child care services, respite care, linguistic services, and health education and risk reduction. You also note that this is broken up into core services and support services. There is, I'm sure all of you know, there is a mandate around funding towards core services, though we have in the past been able to apply for the specific term.
Waiver?
The waiver, thank you, wow. It's been a minute since I've had to explain this one. The 2575 waiver, which I believe we have always been able to, HRSA has always granted us. So that allows us to spend, apply more funding towards support services. That's largely because during sort of the Obamacare rollout, a lot of things were able to be picked up under core services that were being funded federally. And so we are able to apply more funding towards support services. So just sort of explaining this, making sure you guys all know what it looks like. This will be a document that you guys need to fill out. You can see what the previous year's prioritization looked like. And this is the aggregate of all council members. All right, Kira, if you want to jump to the funding scenarios. So as you'll see here, we have three funding scenarios. These are already moved and seconded. They have been approved through community engagement. So it is a motion on the floor. It does not need to be moved and seconded again. Because it is involving money, we will need to do a roll call vote. And we will do a vote for each one individually. So I'll start with increased funding, which, you know, in the past has been something that we kind of thought of as a pipe dream or unlikely to happen, but miracles do happen, I suppose. And this year currently, we actually did receive increased funding. So the scenario coming out of from community engagement and was also approved by membership is, if increased funding occurs, service category resource allocation will be increased proportionally all across all categories. That is how it was applied this year.
And that, Dave, just as clarification, that's how we've done it in the past as well.
Actually, generally what we do is, because it is so unlikely, what the funding, what the scenario here is generally that we will reconvene and discuss.
Okay.
So that has been what we have voted on over the past. I mean, in every single one of these that I've been involved in, we have said that we will just reconvene and discuss, which is what happened this year. We reconvened and discussed and decided to apply it proportionally. So if we assume that that is how we would move forward next year, then this makes sense. If you have concerns, you could make a motion for a different option if you choose.
So, but this doesn't preclude us if we did get an increased funding next year of meeting about that.
It doesn't. This is in some ways just sort of like, this is what we've all agreed. This is sort of in the moment for the summit. We need to have sort of made a statement, but of course you could reconvene and discuss at any time.
Okay.
Nah?
I am on mute. I had a question. Is this just for San Francisco's allocations? Because when we received the increase, we put it to like one service category. In Marin, we did, because it doesn't make sense logistically for us to do it proportionally across all service categories. Is it different? Are we talking about San Francisco versus the Marin and San Mateo?
Okay. Yes, we are. So you guys do your own allocations and prioritizations. Those do sort of the Central Planning Council does review those, but those are sort of independent. Matt?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. And before we end the call, please remind me, because I feel like it's always October that we give our county presentations and Mark hasn't sent anything out to us. I just want to make sure I'm getting prepared where we do the allocations and everything, but I can't remember. I should remember.
Yeah, it's usually October and we haven't received the email yet.
Okay.
I'll check in with him and confirm that. I'm also surprised. I, for some reason, thought that that had been, it was underway, but I will confirm. Thanks, okay. Matt.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, thank you. Not at all. If everyone is, if nobody has a new motion around, oh, here's Chuck. Maybe we'll just wait for him to join us before we commence voting. He had other things happening today and we can give him a moment.
Hey, David, could you tell me when is the summit?
It is at the end of this month.
Okay, that's what I thought. Thank you.
Yeah. So the 26th, it is essentially in the place of our standard full council meeting.
All right, so if the summit is the end of this month, that means that you would need Marin and San Mateo's presentations at the September meeting, or no? It would be the following.
No, they are disconnected.
Okay.
Did Chuck threaten to come in? Oh, there he is. Okay, sorry. Hey, Chuck. I was just running down the explanations of the resource allocation motions. This is a motion. These are motions that have already been on the floor, coming initially from community engagement, and have also been approved through membership as they stand. You always have the option of putting forward a new motion for any of these scenarios. So now would sort of be the appropriate time if you chose not to move forward with this. To make a motion. If not, I will put it to a vote. And Irma, are you part of this committee?
Yes, I am.
That's what I thought. I'm just confirming. So because it is having to do with money, this is a roll call vote. So I will go ahead and get started. Irma Parada?
Yes.
Chuck Adams?
Yes.
Matt Geltmaker?
Yes, sorry.
No problem. TJ Lee Miyake?
Yes.
Nali?
Yes.
Ken Pierce?
Yes.
Motion carries. Okay, let's move on to flat funding. Pretty straightforward. If funding remains at current level, service category resource allocation remain level across all categories. Any questions about this relatively straightforward motion? Any desire to change this and put forward a new motion? No, okay. In that case, I'm gonna go ahead and run the roll call vote. Ken Pierce?
Yes.
Natalie?
Yes.
TJ Lee Miyake?
Yes.
Matt Geltmaker?
Yes.
Chuck Adams?
Yes.
Irma Parada?
Yes.
Great. Motion carries. All right. So decreased funding, which in years past has been the sort of most common scenario that we've had to deal with. In the event of decreased funding for the first 10% of reductions, allocations for services that are covered under California's essential healthcare benefits package, which you will note is sort of outlined there at the bottom, will be reduced proportionately. If further reduced allocation is required, reductions will occur proportionally across all service categories. And again, this is how it has been done since the essential healthcare benefits package was first rolled out a number of years ago. Any questions about this? Any desire to change this? Okay. Then I will run the vote. Irma Parada?
Yes.
Chuck Adams?
Yes.
Matt Geltmaker?
Yes.
TJ Lee Miyake?
Yes.
Nali?
Yes.
And Ken Pierce?
Yes.
Great. Motion carries. This will then move on to steering later this week. Thank you very much. That's all I have for that.
Next on our agenda is our EPI report. And I think Sharon and Jason have already introduced themselves, so I'm going to turn it over to you. Sharon, y'all decide yourself whether you want to take questions during it or have the questions hold until the end. Which would you prefer?
I'm comfortable with having questions at the end, and I'll make sure to move through my slides quickly so that we have enough time for that.
All right, thank you. Go ahead. People can raise your hand and see if you have questions, and we'll wait to the end and call on you in that order. Thank you. Go ahead, Sharon.
Thank you, Ken. Good afternoon, committee members and council members. My name is Sharon Pipkin. I'm an epidemiologist with San Francisco Department of Public Health. And I want to thank the committee for this opportunity to present a draft presentation. This is the presentation of the HIV epi report that will go to the, that will also be presented at the summit after this committee's comments and feedback and revisions. I also want to acknowledge my colleague, Jason Mello, is here with me today. He's in attendance as an observer of how the Council Affairs Committee works with our unit to prepare the presentations for the summit. I do want to highlight that the 2021 EPI report was just released earlier this afternoon at 1 p.m. And we aim to email it to the Council Affairs Committee, the slides, so that you could see the real data. We had emailed you kind of placeholder slides 10 days ago. So I hope that either, you know, before this meeting or after this meeting, Kira's already disseminated those. But in any event, they'll be up on the screen for you to see today. And we are primarily looking for guidance from you on the content to emphasize at the summit. And also we need guidance on what content to add and definitely content to drop in order to fit the timeline that we've been given at the summit. So with that, I will begin to share my screen. Just give me a moment here. And are you seeing my screen all right? If you could just nod your heads. Perfect. Okay. Again, this is these are the slides for the Council Affairs Committee meeting today. And very briefly, the outline of my presentation today will begin with some new diagnosis trends that we'd like to highlight for 2021. We want to present some data on focus populations that we've heard the council is interested in, including older persons with HIV age 50 and older, as well as trans women. Thirdly, we will present data on the HIV care continuum, which includes care indicators and our progress. After that, we will look at survival times, survival probabilities after stage 3 HIV infection. And then we want to present some mortality trends that are emerging in the San Francisco population. And lastly, we have some existing and new data on HIV pre-exposure prophylaxis, the care continuum from data from two sites in San Francisco. So this first slide is very familiar to many of you. It presents trends among HIV diagnoses, deaths, and also the number of persons living with HIV in San Francisco from 2006 to 2021. The orange line here represents annual diagnosis case counts. The blue line represents annual deaths. And then the yellow bars represent persons living with HIV. And the things that I want to highlight for you is that we're seeing fluctuations in the case counts between 2019 and 2021. So 2019 to 2020, we saw a decline of about 20% year to year. And that was largely due to the COVID pandemic. We saw delays in HIV testing and diagnoses. However, in 2021, we saw this increase of 16% to 160 cases in 2021. And that is, we believe, a combination of, you know, people starting to engage care again, so increased testing and diagnoses in the city, as well as increasing transmission in certain subgroups with, you know, shelters in place lifting and greater mobility and activity within San Francisco. Deaths, we want to we want to point out are increasing slightly annually since 2016. And then persons living with HIV peaked here in 2016 and then has been declining since then. And in 2021, about 73% of our persons living with HIV were older than 50 years old. So with diagnosis trends among cisgender men, we want to show you what the data looks like by transmission category. And very briefly, overall, again, you see that among cisgender men, the diagnoses declined in 2020 and then increased in 2021. What's interesting is that among cisgender men, MSM, who don't inject drugs, which is this yellow line, continue to decrease annually throughout this time period. From 2020 to 2021, other transmission categories for cis men did increase. So MSM, who are not injection drug users, were the only group that continued a slight decline. For the trends among cisgender women by transmission category, this brown line shows you the overall diagnoses among cisgender women. And so from 2019 to 2021, you see this increase in annual diagnoses. And then by transmission category, we're seeing this we saw an increase among women who inject drugs from 2019 to 2020, and that's pretty much been level. And then from 2020 to 2021, we also saw among women who we don't know what their transmission category is, we saw an increase there, and that's this dark green line. We also understand that the council is interested in data on trans women as a target population. So we wanted to show you the annual diagnosis among trans women from 2012 to 2014. It was more or less level at 12 diagnoses per year. And then more recently, we see this fluctuation again. This decline in 2020 is due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And then in 2021, we see that increase back to very similar diagnoses as 2019. When we look at diagnosis trends by racial ethnic group, what I'd like to highlight here is that in more recent years, since about 2017, whites and Latinx persons continue to trend very closely together in terms of annual case counts. Again, in 2021, the number of Latinx diagnoses exceeded the number of white diagnoses. And then I want to pivot here in our discussion of new diagnoses to looking at rates of HIV diagnosis. So I'm not sure if the committee would like us to explain at the summit our use of rates, or why we use rates in conjunction with diagnosis counts. But rates do adjust for differences in the underlying population. So it's adjusting for differences in these in the sizes of these racial ethnic and gender groups. And so in this analysis of rates of diagnoses, we want to point out that a couple of things that for the most recent year, 2021, the diagnosis rates are increasing among three groups. So that's white cis men, which is this yellow line that's down here. Also increasing are Latino cis men, which is this solid green line at 65 per 100,000 population. And then thirdly, this Latina cis women, which is this dashed green line. And you'll also see from the numbers we put up here that that Black and Latino men continue to have higher diagnosis rates compared to other racial, ethnic, gender groups, and Latina and Black women had very similar diagnosis rates in 2021. One population that is of importance to prevention and care efforts right now is persons experiencing homelessness. And in this slide, we present the trend of both the number of diagnoses who were homeless at the time of diagnosis, as well as the proportion of total annual diagnoses that persons experiencing homelessness made up. So while you see the blue bars represent the numbers of homeless cases, and it's really fluctuating quite a bit. But what's really important to highlight here is the proportion that homeless persons make up of annual diagnoses, and that's been on the increase since starting in 2018. And continues to be a high proportion of annual diagnoses. For 2021, almost a quarter of our new diagnoses were persons experiencing homelessness. And then this is just another slide discussing persons experiencing homelessness at diagnosis, this time using data for the last 10 years. So, and then also comparing them to persons who did not experience homelessness at diagnosis. So we want to point out that among homeless diagnoses, there were higher proportions of cis women and trans women. And then down here in transmission category, trans women and persons who inject drugs are accounting for a much higher proportion of people of homeless diagnoses than non-homeless diagnoses. This slide is usually asked for by a part of the audience interested in insurance status among new diagnoses. So we just want to point out that the yellow portions of these bars correlate with the proportion of new diagnoses that do not have insurance. And this is for cases that were diagnosed in the last 5 years. And over on the right-hand side, it gives you a trend of by year of diagnosis, like how many, what proportion of people had insurance and did not have insurance. And that ranged from 18% up to 28% in 2020. And in 2021, it was 23% that did not have health insurance at diagnosis. So I have, five summary points about the new diagnoses that draw the audience towards this increase in 2021 of 16% in terms of number of diagnosed cases. And then wanted to point out again some of the things you've already heard about various gender and racial ethnic groups, the diagnosis rates that increased in 2021, and then this metric about persons experiencing homelessness and how much of the new diagnoses they continue to make up in 2021. The next couple of slides that I have talk about populations of interest to the council that I've heard from Mark Molnar. The next two slides talk about persons newly diagnosed who were age 50 years and older, again, for the last 10 years. The blue bars stand for the number of diagnoses, and then the orange line represents what proportion of all annual diagnoses were age 50 and older. So what I like to point out is, starting with in 2019, we see this increase up to 21% of 21% of our annual diagnoses were 50 and older, suggesting a bit of a shift there, and it remains higher than it was prior to 2018. This is a new slide that the community asked us for this year, and it compares persons newly diagnosed in the last 10 years by MSM transmission category, as well as their age group. So, MSM and non-MSM new diagnoses and younger persons compared to older persons diagnosed. So it just gives you some comparisons, and there's, you know, some gaps in the table that according to what, you know, what demographic this group of people belong to. And I just wanted to highlight that, you know, among our older, our MSM in the older group, two-thirds of them were white, and that's a racial ethnic distribution that's, you know, very different from our other non-MSM diagnoses, both younger persons and older persons. The next two slides are data on trans women. This one on new diagnoses over the last 10 years. So we just wanna give the audience a chance to look at the distribution of characteristics among trans women and all other new diagnoses. And this slide also about trans women, but all living, among all living persons with HIV. Again, comparing trans women to not trans women. And, probably the most stark piece is here in the middle regarding persons who inject drugs. So you can see a really, really big difference between trans women and those who are not trans women in the proportion that inject drugs. The next couple of slides I have are about the HIV care continuum, and the council has, is very much used to seeing this, and we have data here from 2017 all the way to 2021. And a couple of things that we wanted to point out here is that among the linkage to care within 1 month of diagnosis, we saw, some decline in 2020 from 95% to 92%. That was probably due to the COVID-19 pandemic. In 2021, we do see that linkage to care is, increasing again back to what we believe are pre-pandemic levels of linkage to care. Retention in care, did decline pretty significantly in 2020, and we don't have the data yet for 2021 to show you what retention and care looked like. And as far as viral suppression, this is also kind of interesting. So these, lighter dashed areas represent viral suppression after 6 months of diagnosis. So again, we're seeing, a decline to 75% of persons virally suppressed at 6 months for 2020. And then of the people that we're monitoring so far for 2021 diagnoses, it's been level. Again, 75% of people virally suppressed within 6 months. We're doing, fine on indicators and the time to achieving these outcomes. So here we're looking at diagnoses from 2017 to 2020, and there's really very no change, just stable for the metrics looking at diagnosis to care, and also from the time to care from care to antiretroviral treatment. Where we're seeing some differences is from the time from diagnosis to viral suppression. So in 2019, it was a shorter amount of time to get virally suppressed. And in 2020, it was, that had increased slightly. And it was no worse than the time that we measured in among 2018 diagnoses. When we look at the care indicator of viral suppression among all persons living with HIV, the thing I want to point out here is that in 2021, 72% of persons living with HIV were virally suppressed. And that's just a slight increase compared to 70% of people in 2020. These are all subgroups that did worse than the overall in terms of viral suppression. And again, with persons experiencing homelessness, about a quarter of them are experiencing viral suppression in 2021. We have one slide on showing 3 years of survival, the survival probability after stage three or AIDS. And this is for our last 9 years of diagnosis. And the overall, it was 88% surviving 3 years after stage three diagnosis. The content in this slide is very similar to the last report, and there really isn't a lot different that we're showing here. The next couple of slides are going to transition to talking about mortality. So this first slide shows the audience what age-adjusted mortality rates and the trends going back to 2011. And these are age-adjusted for gender as well as racial ethnic group. Again, because the age structures in these subgroups can be quite different from one another. So, we do this adjustment to make sure that, what we're seeing is not just simply due to very different age distributions in these underlying groups. And what I want to point out is that there is some increase in mortality rates among Black and also among white cis men. So those are the yellow solid line and also the dark blue solid line. This dashed green line is the mortality rate for trans women, and that is not age adjusted. What's striking is that the unadjusted mortality rate for trans women is the highest in 2021 of all of these groups that we're looking at. We have a couple of slides that look at trends and underlying causes of death. Just to orient you to how to read this figure, we have the three colored bars representing the deaths in three different time periods. So the gray bars are the most recent time period, decedents in 2017 to 2020. And then the percentages we're showing is what percent of deaths in this time period. So we wanted to show you the leading underlying causes of death, with HIV still being the leading underlying cause of death in this population. What's notable in this year's report is that accidents, which include drug overdoses, has become the second leading underlying cause of death. And even though you see the percentages here are the same as what's reported for non-AIDS cancers, the number of the frequency of deaths in this time period due to accidents and drug overdoses is higher than non-AIDS cancers. So that's a difference that we wanted to point out to our audience members. And this next slide is looking at causes of death just slightly differently. It looks at trends in multiple causes of death. So in addition to underlying causes, all the other causes that also contributed to death. So it's the same orientation with the different colors representing different time periods of decedents. When we look at all contributing causes of deaths, HIV is still the leading, but coming down quite significantly over the three time periods and only accounting for half of deaths in the recent time period. And then heart disease becomes the second leading cause of death. And accidents and overdoses are are now the fourth leading cause of death. We also wanted to report that COVID-19 for the single year of 2020 contributed to, deaths in 4.2% of decedents in that year. And this next slide looks at the top multiple causes of death I showed you on the previous slide, but we're looking at it by gender now and just for the most recent time period, 2017 to 2020. The bars now correspond to the three genders that we looked at, cis men, cis women, and trans women. And the percentages are what percent of deaths within that gender group for this time period. So you can see some interesting disparities between the three gender groups. And one that I wanted to highlight was this disparity in the drug overdose percent of deaths in each gender group. They are, more represented in among cis women at 30% of cis women in that that died in that time period, and also 37% of trans women in that time period. Drug overdoses contributed to their deaths. The last five slides that I have for you today talk about PrEP. And I mentioned earlier that we have this data from two of our agencies in San Francisco, San Francisco AIDS Foundation, and also San Francisco City Clinic, which is our municipal STD clinic. So I believe that in previous years, we've shown this data for San Francisco AIDS Foundation for 2020. What's notable was the number of people that have been of clients that have been screened overall for PrEP was much lower due to the pandemic. And then you could see these disparities among the priority populations that the AIDS Foundation is tracking, with trans women, these dark blue bars, really having much lower PrEP uptake in terms of scheduling appointments, being enrolled on PrEP, and then still being on PrEP at 6 months. What's new for content in the report this year is we also looked at different PrEP regimens that people were enrolled into at San Francisco AIDS Foundation. So we looked at two regimens, the daily PrEP, which is a daily oral dose of Truvada, versus PrEP 2-on-1, which is taking Truvada orally, but only around times of sex. And we looked at we looked for differences in PrEP at 6 months to see if there were differences in retention on PrEP, and overall we had the same proportion of people on PrEP at 6 months for both regimens. And then there's some slight differences as we look at priority populations. So that was new content that was introduced this year. And then we also wanted to just show progress as we were coming out of the pandemic in 2021. The AIDS Foundation reported an increase in clients that had been screened and participated in their PrEP program. One of the things to look at here is the improvements among trans women from 2020 to 2021. So there's some interesting things here in terms of seeing the improvements that were made, as well as the much larger numbers of people who entered PrEP program. And then lastly, the two slides from City Clinic. This looks at City Clinic's data going back to 2014. And the main point of these slides is to show PrEP uptake among MSM over time. And so this slide is showing you differences by racial ethnic groups, pointing out that Black African American MSM seems seem to still lag behind these other racial ethnic groups. And then my last slide here is just looking at the same data slightly differently. Again, eligible MSM, but looking at age. And this is interesting because it kind of shows you how, the different age groups, really had different rates of PrEP uptake. So we had, really quicker PrEP uptake in age groups that were younger, 44 years and younger. But you can see the older age groups with the magenta and the orange have lower proportions of eligible MSM that are enrolling into PrEP at City Clinic. So that was my breeze through of the data for the summit. And I'd like to take questions and also suggestions on content that we'd like to drop for the summit, and also what other content you'd like to see added. Thank you very much. Matt, would you like to start?
Sure, sorry. So I had a couple. One of them, I guess I was a little confused on. It was back on the underlying causes of death. You had two separate categories of accidents, which included overdoses and then overdoses. Uh-huh. Assuming you subtract the drug overdose from the accidents, and that's the other accidents?
Right. So we wanted to pull out, when we say drug accidents, including overdoses, we wanted to show the audience, like, look, this is the overwhelming majority of accidents are drug overdoses.
Okay.
So if that's confusing, we could please feel free to suggest, another way of.
Or even just stating that, because I sat there and I thought, wait a minute, I'm confused, because so theoretically there on this slide that you're showing, really only two for this current 3-year period, or the most recent 3-year period, only 2% of accidents were not drug overdoses.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it was a lot, the vast, yeah. So that's the only thing. It just maybe, like you said, if that's what you were trying to make sure people saw, because I wasn't sure if I was reading it correctly. So just
Thank you. That's really helpful. Yeah, that was new this year too. New way.
The other one's a can of worms, I'm afraid to ask. And that's just on the numbers of living HIV cases. So I know, I'm San Mateo. And we do even the allocations of our Ryan White Part A, and even then us and San Francisco are part of the HOPWA. Marin's a separate HOPWA thing. But it's always based on the state reported numbers of living HIV. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge discrepancy. So I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, you're right. There is a separate set of numbers that comes from the state, especially for the Ryan White application. Because that's all tied to current addresses and who's living in the counties at a particular time period. And that is different from the data that I'm putting in this slide. So we could, we could think about not showing overall persons living with HIV in this manner. These are just the cumulative number of people who were residents at diagnosis that we know that they're still alive. But this doesn't account for, what county they're living in right now.
Oh, okay. Because I guess I'm reading it as people living with HIV currently in San Francisco.
No, it is different from that metric. So we, if what the summit wants to, drill down to how many people are still living in San Francisco, we can provide another number, because that is in the report.
Okay, that's where I got confused. Okay, I wasn't understanding that nuanced difference. So
Okay, thanks.
That would describe it, because it's a pretty significant different amount. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
I'm not saying one way or the other. I guess I just was confused.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And maybe other folks can weigh in too. TJ, would you like to go next?
Sure. Thank you. And thank you for the presentation. I just had three things I wanted to bring up. So on slide 27, it's super, super crowded. Like, I don't know if anybody else had a problem reading it, but I'm wondering if we can move the first column onto a separate page or something. Mm-hmm. I've tried with my glasses on and without my glasses because my eyes are aging and I couldn't read them.
Okay. So I didn't know if anybody else had that problem. This needs to be bigger and less busy. Yeah. Thank you.
And then and a similar comment basically on slide 29.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you could do that, but I mean, if there was a way to adjust that a little bit.
Yeah.
Because the columns are so super close and the numbers are,
We could even we could even display like less number of years if that would help, or but I hear what you're saying. Yeah, and thank you for letting me know. That's just really, really hard to see.
And then thanks for all the numbers related to trans people in the community. I know that one of our members is really adamant about getting that information every year. So there was one place that you merged, I think Latino men who have sex with men and trans numbers. And because the number was too small, you didn't have that number. I'm sure that council member is going to want to ask you that. Just having been around with this council member now since 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So like any of the numbers that, if you can be prepared for that ahead of time, because it's a, our council member is a very loved individual who is a major stakeholder in that community.
Yeah, thanks for that. Thank you for that heads up. We try really hard to display it whenever we can without, making things too specific about any group. Ken, would you like to go next?
And we're closing in on our time, so I'll take some of my questions offline, but the ones that relate to the presentation, I think slide 21, similarly, when we see that kind of, if it's the one I think of, I've got my numbers right. Yes. When we see this trans women, the spike that we have here, putting it a little bit into perspective by numbers or something that it's going to explain a little bit, it goes down, it's stable, and then boom, it jumps back up again. Something that will help, because similarly, I think there are going to be questions around that.
Okay.
And also, whenever you're doing things and you're doing them in just percentages, and we see kind of alarming trends, putting the numbers rather than the percentages will also help us put it into a little bit of perspective.
Sure. We try to do that throughout whenever possible. I hear what you're saying in terms of that context is important.
Example would be slide 22, I think, when we saw heart disease go up from 9% to 15%, which is about a 50% increase on percent. But when you're talking about percent to percent, that really doesn't, you don't have a sense of what that means.
Mm-hmm.
You follow my reasoning here?
Yeah. And it's helpful to know that the actual counts matter. We do want to present the distribution, and we'll present the count too. The counts can also often be going up simply because of the aging population of persons living with HIV. So,
and then you. The last two would be at when you're talking about stages of HIV. I think it might help whenever there's a slide with that for you to have the definition of what stage is what. So people who are not familiar, who are not clinicians, mm-hmm. and it, you know, stages is fairly new to everybody who's not a clinician. Mm-hmm. So having that clarification. And the other is similarly homeless versus not homeless, because mm-hmm. I know that jumps around all over. So knowing what definition of homeless, what's included in your definition of homeless, I think would be somehow helpful to folks and stave off a lot of questions about, does this include people in SROs? Does this, you know, uh-huh. what, when, where?
Okay, so add a slide for
persons. Well, I wouldn't even say you have to add the slide if you can put it at the bottom, or if there's some way for you to mm-hmm. incorporate it, because it's not the main issue. What's the main mm-hmm. issue? All right.
Yeah. Thank you for the reminder to define those terms. Yeah.
And I think, we still got some more.
David, would you like to go next?
Yeah, I was just similar to Matt. I was thinking about that total living cases number, and it's such a distinct difference from what we see. And because the council sort of works kind of with that number that the number that is utilized in the Ryan White Part A application, I think it's going to be jarring. It was jarring for me. It clearly was jarring for other people to see how different that number was. I don't know whether it's easier for you to use the same the same numbers that we're using, or how you're getting those numbers, or kind of just be prepared to get ahead of that and explain why those numbers look so different, and maybe even have that on the slide in case people are looking at this sort of out of the context of your presentation.
Yeah.
Because it is very different, and I have the sense that that's going to cause a significant amount of confusion for folks.
Okay. I think that among this group, I've actually had very few questions about the trends of persons living on this slide. So I may present the 1 year, count of persons that were living in San Francisco according to their address data for that year. And that'll be like what we have for the most recent year, 2021.
Okay.
I think we got one last question and we're running behind. So,
Okay. Na, would you like to go next?
Yes. Thank you for the presentation. I had a question. Did SFDPH adopt the term Latinx to use across the board? Just because we have a couple members from the Latina population on our council, and they brought it up that they don't identify with that term. And she's also on the planning council, so it just might come up. I don't know if you have a response for that.
Thank you for that. And I think that in previous years, Council Affairs has raised that question. So I'm glad it's come up again, so we know what's appropriate to put out at the council at the summit. Yes, we have adopted Latinx as the overall term for that racial, that ethnic group. However, you will see in my presentation that when we're referring to like gender specific, I do use Latino and Latina. So I'd like to hear what overall guidance from this committee on, you know, the term, the usage of those ethnic terms.
You know, I think this came up once before, or many times actually, Sharon. And I think I would just speak for the committee. I don't think we're in a position to make that guidance, because I think that guidance has to come from the health department as they gather the data on what terms they use, because it is somewhat controversial. as was just brought up, we have a member who I guarantee you will challenge that and will take great offense at it. And at one point, they would just kind of close down by saying, this is what we do. But I think having some explanation or something so we can go offline if it becomes takes an inordinate amount of time would be real helpful. But I don't know that we are in the position. I would ask Matt, how do y'all handle that?
In Marin County, we actually agreed not to use that term because it's been brought up many times on our end. And so, and they're from the population. And so we've just decided to use Latino, Latina moving forward for our documents that we produce.
And it hasn't been brought up in our county at all, which is interesting because that's the Latino population, the mostly Latino population are the vast majority of our infections. So, and
you use Latinx?
I'd have to look. I don't even know for sure. I'd have to look at our most recent. We just put out our quarterly report. Give me a second and move on and I'll come back to you.
Okay, I think that would be helpful because if the other two counties are not using Latinx, then maybe that gives you some insight, Sharon.
Yeah, thank you. And I might have questions offline about it that I'll circle back to with the council affairs.
So TJ, at this point, we're good almost 15 minutes beyond and our next presenter. So we're gonna be cutting off them. Unless this is real critical, can you ask your question offline or send your information offline?
Sure. Sharon, I'm going to drop my email in the chat box. Could you just reach out to me, please?
Yes, thanks. I certainly will. Thank you.
All right. Sharon, again, thank you. As always, fascinating presentation. And I'm sure there are lots of questions will come up. So I think our next speaker will go straight into that. John?
Thanks, Ken. Can everyone see my screen here?
We can.
Yes.
You can? Okay, great. So I know we are running behind, but this should be able to go. Your support yet. So I will also say this is less of a presentation, more of an overview of how to read this report. So ask you all for some ideas on a couple of service categories, 2, 3, 4, whatever that you all would like me to highlight that I can go into more of a deep dive in and pull more data for, like, for example, mental health or center of excellence or psychosocial support. I know that's been a focus of the Planning Council. So have a think on that, and you can email me or let me know here on some ideas, and I'll start putting that together. So this is the cover page here. And if anyone wants to interrupt me with questions, by all means, go ahead. And then we have the table of contents, starting prioritization order, which you saw earlier, then budget information, demographic info, then we dive into the services with core, followed by support, and then some acknowledgments at the end. So here are the service category order. You can see mental health is number one, primary care, center of excellence, medical case management, so on and so forth. You can see on the right-hand side if it's Ryan White Part A funded or not, and what page number the summary is on. Then we'll go into the budget information for Part A, Part A EHE, Part B, Part C, which is not on there right now, and San Francisco General Fund. That will be for the 2021-2022 year. You can see here, this is for San Francisco. Total funding was $42 million for last year. And you can see what percentage and what the amount is per funding source. So Part A, EHE, B, Part B supplemental, Part C, general fund, and then general fund getting to zero. This will obviously change slightly, but the funding amounts do stay pretty consistent year in, year out for the most part. And here it is by service category. You can see mental health receives 17% of the funding, primary medical care 19%, center of excellence 35%, so on and so forth. And the same thing for support services, starting with emergency housing, it's in priority order, so as we saw earlier. and all the way around rental subsidies, TJ, your program at SFAF, it's quite a large chunk of this. Then I'll go into demographic information. This first one is number of clients, kind of hard for me to see here, by age. So what I'll do is break it down by decade here, and then I'll choose something that kind of sticks out to me that's been a 10 or 12 year trend. So you can see back in 2010, 67% were over the age of 45. That's up to 72%, and will probably be a little bit higher this year. And here we have it by housing status. This is full from Aries, so it's not always perfect. It's only as good as the information that goes into it. And I'm not entirely sure how often case managers are updating this, but I can give you a general idea. So you can see the majority of our clients are stably housed, but those who have become unstable or temporarily housed have gone up considerably since 2010, 19% back then and now up to 27%. So we'll see how that looks this year. Now we have by federal poverty level, vast majority are below 100% of FPL. And you can see the percentage of those below 138% of FPL. Oddly, it went down last year. I'm not entirely sure why. I'm going to rerun that information and see if that goes up again. It could have been like a COVID glitch, information not going in accurately. Now we have insurance status. The circle at the top, the pie graph, is going to look a little odd because people can have multiple insurance statuses in Aries. So it's not a great, it's not very helpful here. The number of clients uninsured, I do think that's quite helpful. 23% in 2011, up to 32% last year. As a heads up, I'm not sure if you all know this, but we got a note the other day from the state saying that they are actually moving on from Aries. We're moving into a new system for doing the reporting to the feds. So hopefully some of these issues like insurance and being able to pull better age demographic information will be rectified with that new database. Here we have race ethnicity. So how I do it, as you can see here, I do Latino, A, and X in order to kind of address that issue. Because I know some people, like you were saying, do have issues with the whole Latinx thing, but others have the issue with the Latino and Latina. So I try and just cut that off and just have it all there. And then below, I have the percentage identified as persons of color. So back in 2010, less than half, now to 54%. And I would guess that's going to go up again this year as well. Then by gender identity, I don't put in trans men. The client count is way too low. And when reporting out on things like file suppression, we could run into the issue of outing somebody's personal health information. So here I outline the percentage of cis women and trans women over the years, then 2% increase since 2010. Now I move into viral suppression by viral suppression count. So percentage under 200 was at 86% last year. Then I went back 11 years, this year will be 12. So 73% 11 years ago, 86% a year ago. And we'll see where it is this next year. It might be 86, 87, maybe down to 85 due to COVID. We'll see. Here we have viral suppression by some demographic groups. So cis men, 85%, cis women, 85%, trans women were 87% last year. And then I did viral suppression by race ethnicity. Pretty straightforward. And here we have core services, the amount of units of service that were contracted, the amount of units of service that were provided, and the percentage that are truncated. Truncation means if somebody performed, they were contracted to perform 100 units of service of medical case management, but they delivered 150. We only count the 100. We do not reward overperformance here. It gives a better indication of the actual delivery across the program. Similar data here, just for number of clients, unduplicated clients, again, truncated. And these percentages and the percent and the number provided might be a little wonky like they were last year. Our goal is 8. I would expect some of this data to be kind of wonky again this year as well, with hopefully next year getting back up to our 85% threshold. Same thing, units of service contracted and provided for support services. and unduplicated clients for support services contracted and provided. And now we start going into each service category. Again, I'm looking to you all to give me a couple of ideas of three or four to whatever you think is best. I'm not going to go through the entire report. That would take absolutely ages. I don't think it would be very helpful anyway. So here's a general overview of how it goes. Mental health, the priority number is number one. Then you have the HRSA core services category, mental health services, and then a definition of the service. Then I gave a rough program description. In this case, there's four programs. We don't name program like agency or anything like that. Just the focus of what the population is, the general geographic area, so on and so forth. And then I have a little map down below showing where the services are being provided. And then we have the number of units of service contracted and provided. Unduplicated clients again, contracted and provided. This is the same from a couple of slides ago, but now you can see it in bar form if that helps any. Then I show the budget of how this service category is funded. So mental health is funded mostly by general fund, 53%, and then 47% with Part A. And then the amount of money that was allocated, just over $3 million last year, and the amount of money that was expended, $2.8 million, so 86%. And I'll show the demographics of who accessed this service. So cis men, 82% of people who receive mental health services identified as cis men, 11% cis women, 7% trans women. It's kind of interesting to see, say, across the entire system, we have 5% trans women who receive our services, but 7% of them access mental health. It's kind of an interesting little window there. I do the same for race ethnicity, same thing again with Latino, A, and X, and then by age. I know, Ken, you'd love to see the age split out more along the decades. Unfortunately, I cannot do that when drilling down into service categories. Hopefully with this new data system we're getting, we'll be better able to do that in the coming years. And then again, the same for primary medical care, the priority number, the service category, the definition, the program descriptions, where they are located, and the same data as previously. So this goes all the way down for every single service category that we provide. Again, there's no real purpose in going through all of this for everybody, but it's available for anything that anybody wants to see. Particularly interested in dental care, it's there. If you're interested in psychosocial support, it's there. And again, let me know which ones you want me to highlight. And yeah, so any questions or feedback or ideas? If somebody else could lead that, I can't quite see the hand. So Ken, if you wouldn't mind.
We'll start with Matt.
Sorry. So John, I guess on the first part of your presentation, when you're talking about kind of the insurance status and everything, how is that different from what Floor and Maria just did last month?
It's probably very duplicative.
Yeah. So that's where I don't know if we're going over this individually again, but I don't know if we need to go over it again since we just had it last month.
Okay.
Does anybody,
I could just say that. I could just leave it in and say, Floor and Maria reviewed this last month. We'll jump over this quickly.
Yeah, I don't know what other people think. It just feels.
I think leaving it in, but jumping over it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
No problem.
And John, my question is, not question really, but request is, this issue of truncated has come up over and over and over again. And I know some of the agencies don't bother to report once they reach their contracted amount and they just get 100%. And some give information so we can see that they are providing far more and there's more demand and need. So how we use that data is gonna be difficult unless there's a little bit more explanation, especially when the truncated falls below your 85%. So this is just a heads up, because I know there probably will be questions. I don't know how you answer that, but I just throw that
out. I appreciate that, Ken. Yeah, I will talk to Bill about that and figuring out a way to try and Yeah.
Am I correct that
there are times? Go ahead, Ken.
Am I correct that some agencies just don't report more than 100%, even if they provide?
A lot, yes. But especially UC, they commonly do not report once they hit their max. So one really thing
the data cannot be used to in any way to suggest demand.
No, this does not indicate demand of services. It just indicates services that were accessed.
So maybe a statement to that effect and why. And then other than that, it would be back down to those under 85% making sure we have some kind of comment on what may contribute to that.
Yep, sounds good. No problem. I'll make a note of that now.
Were there any other questions? I'm trying to scan down and see that. So John, as usual, thank you so much.
Thank you all.
And I think
I will reach out to you all and even get some ideas of any service categories you're particularly interested.
Okay, good enough. So I think our final agenda item is looking at our next meeting, which I think will be October 11th from 3 to 4. And has noted as a vote. David, what's the vote there?
There should have been an agenda item. Mark put this together and he must have slipped his mind, but I think that we can slide it in here without feeling like we're breaking the law. There is a conversation that is happening among all committees this month around return to in-person. The co-chairs asked that I poll each committee and just lead a conversation around what folks want to see, what kind of timeline they're looking at, and apprise them of some of the thoughts they've had around how to make at least full council meetings safer.
So Dave, just a clarification, wasn't there some decision made through the end of the year?
All
committees, or am I mistaken?
There was not. We had made a decision to come back to, as many of you remember, there was a decision to go back to in person. And depending on what the committee itself felt, starting in May, I believe this committee decided to remain remote for the time being. Some committees, I believe membership had maybe decided to go back to in person, and full council was going to be in person. We did have a full council in person, and more than one person got sick. Irma, or maybe it was Beth. Thank you, Beth. So things were sort of put on a TBD basis for since May, and there was just a conversation at the co-chairs meeting and at steering last month about what we wanted to do, look at our timelines around when to come back to in person. And that was also sort of still with committees kind of functioning somewhat independently, their own decision-making process around when they wanted to return. The co-chairs have decided that the at least two steps they can take that might address some of our challenges from the previous May meeting, in which we had that did not work out so well. That there would still be food, but it would be on a to-go only basis, so no eating in the meeting, but food would be provided. Second, we would strongly encourage folks to take a rapid test day of. If they wanted to meet in person. So
Dave, we'll clarify, are you asking our thoughts about the full council, or are you asking our thoughts about the subcommittee?
I'm asking your thoughts around both. I'm hoping to take the council's temperature around returning to in-person in general, but also would like to hear what your committee has in mind for itself. So the two committees where in this conversation has happened so far have both decided to revisit the issue in January. And they are going to remain remote until then. I think that there are at least two different vaccines on the horizon, one coming very soon and one maybe coming later this year. Sharon, you definitely don't need to hang out for this piece of the conversation. Thank you. And so that may change what things look like. We've kind of always been guided by what new infections look like and as well as hospitalization numbers. And to be honest, the comfort and safety of all of you and what your opinions are around the matter. So that is where we are. I leave the conversation to you, Ken.
So Dave, I think two things that are relevant here. One is, as we all know, generally we don't have December meetings. So really what we're talking about is that the next two meetings, and it would be a little difficult to change October this quickly. As we know, some of our meetings, we don't even have spaces anymore that we can get reservations for. So considering those two things and being an advocate for in-person meetings, I still would say that we should probably wait to the first of the year. And I don't want to lose some of our members who have said outright that if we go back to in-person, they will not be a part of this committee. So that's my recommendation.
I would second, not that we have a motion, but I would second kind of what Ken is saying. And remaining consistent, I feel like we should remain consistent with committees. Like Ken said, it's not very many more meetings, basically two, and you can't really change, so.
Chuck,
I jumped.
I completely agree with that. Let's revisit in January, because it's like, and you know, we only have October, November, and by then we'll know what's going on with if Omicron comes back this winter or not, and then we can have a better temperature then.
I would just suggest, Dave, that we don't have the same dilemma we had before on one of the committees I was on, where depending on how you state the motion and what our quorum is at the time for passing, that we fix that so that doesn't become a problem again, where we went one way and then immediately turned around the next meeting and went the other way, and one member was besieged to change their mind. And so let's just have it tightened when we do visit it in January, if we can. Okay, so if there are no other issues, Dave?
TJ had his hand up.
Sorry, TJ.
No worries, Ken. Thanks, David. Hey, I was just wondering if we could maybe figure this out for the January meeting at the November meeting.
Well, I think the issue is we'll have new members. So we may not even do it in
January, right.
Maybe even February. So,
yeah.
But okay. We can talk about that in steering, and Dave will, if Dave will make sure that comes up at steering, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it is on the steering agenda already. And I will say that is another thing to consider is there have been folks who have rolled off the council who at least one of them, to my memory, was a fairly strong advocate for going back to in person. And we have two new members coming on board who we have yet to hear from. So, and unfortunately membership, we had quorum, but it was a very, very small meeting. I think we only had two committee members available. Everyone else was excused. So I feel like though they agreed to follow suit with community engagement, it wasn't necessarily a fair assessment of what the entire committee thinks. So, But as far as full council goes, I think that's going to be more of a steering decision. So those are, like I said, kind of decoupled in some ways. But yes, we will. I'll pass on everyone's thoughts in steering, and ideally we'll have some direction coming out of there. Not.
Is it possible to poll all of the members and then you let us know the results of the poll and then we make the motion during the committee meeting on the decision? Because I think the problem was that there weren't enough people attending the meeting to vote.
Yeah, so the intention is to do a Survey Monkey at some point, but the co-chairs actually wanted to have a conversation before just sort of sending a survey monkey out, hopefully to at least spur a little bit of like debate or discourse around how people were feeling.
And unfortunately, we've had where the survey monkey went one way and actually the people at the committee voted another way, just because it has to do with who's quorum, who's there.
Yes.
So on that note, I ask all of your indulgences for running over. Our next meeting will be October 11th. And unless there are any other comments, I'm going to call this to a close. Thank you.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye. Kira, do you want to check in really quickly? Stop the recording.